Okay.
The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. I've read JFK Assassination Fiction by Don DeLillo and Norman Mailer and can tell you that this new novel not only is Mike's best book yet, it's much better than DeLillo's and Mailer's efforts to do justice to the most important event in U.S. history. Kevin Barrett, American activist and radio host. Johnny Moon tells the story of a third grader in a Catholic school who wants to do what President John F. Kennedy asked us all to do. Johnny has told his classmates he wants to go to the moon. In fact, he wants to be the first one on the moon. And so the kids brand him with the nickname Johnny Moon. Sister M&M's is Johnny's teacher. Her sister was in Dallas that day, right up close to the limousine, taking pictures just as it happened. She saw some things that did not get reported back in Johnny's hometown Daily News. Sister M&M's and Johnny and the third grade Sacred Heart class decide to tell the truth about what happened. Harvey Wasserman on Johnny Moon. Mike Pelacek is a master of mixing the ethos of the heartland with great moments in history. His Johnny Moon evokes that time in our national story when getting to our favorite satellite was mated with the generation's coming of age. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. Order your copy of Johnny Moon at createspace.com. The latest book from author Mike Pelacek, Johnny Moon. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org, come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a news site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the new American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelacek.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. A couple of days back,
daytime and nighttime were nearly equal in length as the sun crossed the celestial equator. In other words, the Earth's equatorial plane had virtually zero tilt relative to the sun. In still other words, it was the vernal equinox, the first day of spring. Tomorrow is another significant day, at least for me. It will be my 60th birthday. As the saying goes, if I knew I'd lived this long, I'd have taken better care of myself. But actually, I'm in pretty good shape. I hope to be broadcasting this show for many more years. Probably not 60 of them, but, well, hey, you never know, eh? The Mayan calendar has been interpreted to say that the world will end at the autumnal equinox of this year, i.e. December 21st, 2012. Certainly the long count Mayan date will, certainly the long count Mayan date will switch to the next Bechtun at that time. But most scholars don't attribute any significance to that. After all, there were expectations of the end of the world a few years back when the Gregorian calendar, one that most of today's world uses, rolled over from one millennium to the next. Now, over 200 end-of-the-world predictions have been recorded on numerous websites, dating back to the year 44 AD and on well into the future. I think we'll just have to wait and see, don't you? Our sponsor, James Boomy, suggests that the end of this world will come not from a cataclysmic war or runaway climate change, rather from a collision with a meteor. He says, we're long overdue for that event. For some other interesting commentary and predictions, such as the birth of intelligence, his capital model of government, the use, abuse, and future of religion, why the approach of the singularity is totally unrealistic, and many more, visit James Mumy's website, June2508.com. Let him know you heard about him on the New American Dream Radio Show. Here's another significant event, for me at least. This show tonight is the first live broadcast from my new apartment. For over a month, I was stuck with Wi-Fi hotspots to get the internet. Regular listeners will remember that for the last couple of shows, my participation was by telephone. But tonight, I'm back to the normal Skype method, and it is quite a relief. I won't forget how much I depend on the internet for my daily routine. Cataclysmic war doesn't really seem an impossible scenario, actually. You know, given the current warmongering folks in various countries, not least of all our own, could happen. America fancies itself the world's policeman, the single dominant world power. It's a very dangerous situation, the dream of those in power, the nightmare of the rest of us. Except perhaps for the born-again types who think the apocalypse would be a good thing and ought to come along any time. I'm not in a hurry to meet my maker. I think we still have a lot to learn here on this plane of existence or this life or however you want to refer to this thing that we think of as reality. You know, psychics and gurus and schizophrenics have a different take on what is real, but perhaps their reality is realer than real. Thanks to Mr. Tom Wirth, my long-ago drama teacher at Friends Central School, for introducing me to that phrase from Stanislavski, realer than real. I think it's a good one. While I'm thanking people, let me extend also my thanks to all of you who listen to our show. Hope you'll keep coming back, and we'd sure love to hear from you once in a while. And now, it's time for my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Well, happy birthday, Chuck. Tonight we're going to welcome Mel Thorson. Mel Thorson is in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. He's with the 9/11 Truth Group there. And we're going to welcome back Richard Flamer. Richard is with the Chiapas Catholic Worker, but he's in Kansas City tonight. He's in the States doing some construction work to make money for the Chiapas Catholic Worker. Springtime and things are happening. Catholic workers will go to Kansas City soon to protest the construction of a new nuclear weapons plant in Kansas City. And NATO will be coming to Chicago in May, and big plans are being made for a protest there. I have a UFO documentary I'd like to plug, and that's not mine, but it's just the best I've seen on the subject. I usually like the lectures of Richard Dolan on the UFO subject. I think he's really good, but I think this is different and new. If you will Google Forbidden Knowledge TV and Forbidden Knowledge TV and go to Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure. Okay. Sometimes, maybe when you see another fake story about Osama bin Laden written by the CIA creative writing class, you'll think, is this really happening? I guess that it is. And we have the chore or opportunity, however you might see it, to view this from close up. Another person who did this was William Shire. He was in the belly of the beast for the all-important transformative years 33 to 41 of the Third Reich in Berlin. William Shire was the first reporter hired by Edward R. Murrow for what would become a team of journalists for CBS Radio. Shire became known for his broadcast from Berlin from the rise of the Nazi dictatorship through the first year of World War II. And this quote is from William Shire broadcasting from Berlin, or talking about his days in Berlin. He's talking about a meeting and conversing with the German people, and I think it relates very much to the times we're in today. A steady diet over the years of falsifications and distortions made a certain impression on one's mind and often misled it. No one who has not lived for years in a totalitarian land can possibly conceive how difficult it is to escape the dread consequences of a regime's calculated and incessant propaganda. Often in a German home or office, or sometimes in a casual conversation with a stranger in a restaurant, a beer hall, or a cafe, I would meet with the most outlandish assertions from seemingly educated and intelligent persons. It was obvious that they were parroting some piece of nonsense they had heard on the radio or read in the newspapers. Sometimes one was tempted to say as much, but on such occasions, one was met with such a stare of incredulity, such a shock of silence, as if one had blasphemed the Almighty, that one realized how useless it was even to try to make contact with a mind which had become warped and for whom the facts of life had become what Hitler and Goebbels, with their cynical disregard for truth, said they were. And we could substitute Bush and Obama with Hitler and Goebbels. Soviets, during their time of Soviet rule, I would think that those people knew that their news was a fake. That's the impression I get. And the impression I get of us is that we have no idea about Time, Newsweek, nightly TV news, national public radio, some liberal websites, magazines. Some are obvious, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh. Some not so, Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert. Basically, wherever you look, though, TV shows, books, magazines, the ones you'll find on the shiny rack just inside the door at Barnes & Noble. And that's why we do this radio show, to try to make some small dent, some small difference. It's true that it's not easy getting to the truth. If you hear Webster Tarpley and Gordon Duff and others talk about what really happened in Libya and why, you'll see that. But at least that's trying to find the truth. The CIA and FBI and Warren Commission and 9/11 Commission, if they had been faithfully engaged in trying to find out the truth, we would be evolved light years in this country beyond what we are today. Who controls the media? Book publishers, movie makers, newspapers, radio, TV? Well, you just know you won't see certain things in certain places, like on national public radio, All Things Considered. Why? If all things were really considered, studied, thought about, placed on the table, we would not be a nation of American idiots. And this I really believe. Well, folks, William Shire was not afraid, sitting in the belly of the beast in Nazi Germany. And we are perched, or perhaps plopped, in the belly of America. Nazi America, or Democratic America, or Republican America, I don't think it's important what you call it. We all know what it is. and we also cannot be afraid.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being if it's just been politics all along? What if we had a world where progress meant the fulfillment of our human needs for everyone, everywhere? What if we had a world where we find the teachings and great prophets of all religions have been our friend and mentor all along and not our foe? What if we had a world where the air is fresh and invigorating, the water pure and sparkling, and the skies clean and blue? What if the earth is untainted, clean and toxic-free from sea to shining sea? What if the food we eat nourishes, cleanses, and heals us from all ailments and there is no sickness and disease anymore? What if we enlightened ourselves about God as the greatest enlightenment of all? What if we make money and prosperity the way of life for every human being on the planet to unfold and evolve our highest and greatest potential together? What if we had a world where our compassion and humanity to all life on Earth is the key to opening the door to heaven and Earth? What if we find that our openness and unity with all life and each other is our natural high? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. thespiritualun.org.
The New American Dream presents an American Hero special. Recently, we honored patriotic singer-songwriter Toby Keith. He put a boot up their ass. Awesome. Then we honored General Norman Schwarzkopf, General Colin Powell, General Tommy Franks, General something-something Petraeus, all the other generals out there in charge of our patriotic military. We're protecting us from people plowing mountains with oxen and killing them before they fly the oxen over here to dive bomb us with box cutters and not allow us to worship in the churches of our choice. Then we honored Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who uttered those words that will live forever in Catholic hymnals on the sides of police cars. Same awesome style of Madeleine Albright speaking about the children dying in Iraq during the sanctions. We came, we saw, he died. This week, we honor all of you who stand like robots whenever the American flag passes by in a parade or when the national anthem is played at any sporting event, from 7th grade intramural checkers to the Super Bowl. You stand without even thinking, and for that we thank you. For if you had a brain or stop for a moment to think of what you're doing, what you're being asked to do, condone America and its wars and killing, steal from other nations, well, you'd crawl out of that stadium on your knees in shame. And for that, we salute you. You're not a pervert or a murderer or an insane person. You are an American hero.
This portion of tonight's program is being brought to you by the Underpants Bomber, the DC Sniper, the Times Square Fizzler, and the Al-Qaeda Conclave Mosque Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. Hola is great. Wait, no, Allah is great and most awesome. How's it going? We are new to your country. We want to kill you and take your Wii sports software. Our high-rise lairs are too, how you say it, more dude caves and not too gnarly and not cool for bowling. For make benefit, glorious nation of Kabatistan. Death to Peyton Manning and NASCARs and WWF. We come from a very organized, well-kept, well-swept cave in the mountains of Afghanistan, far, far up, in sheep nosebleed section. We did 9/11 and other things like the 93 World Trade Center bombing and the Beirut Marine Barracks bombing and for sure lots of other stuff that we did. We are not the FBI or the CIA, ha, that's for sure. And for sure you would be a silly person who does not fit in your neighborhood to think so. We have nothing to do with George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Bush, the senior one who sits in the front row at the World Series with his pig-resembling wife, or Obama bin Laden, oive, Barack Obama. Thank you very much. Happy times. Have a good day, and please to stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real, and be always awesome. And also, for what reason, we have no idea, we would also like to shout out to those men and women serving in 10,000 countries and municipalities, islands, peninsulas, knolls, glens, gullies, inlets, deltas, fjords, and firths overseas, serving in Berlin and Aachen and Baden and Pfaffen and Mumm, und Dierdorf und Daden und Dasher und Prancer und Donder und Blitzen. We need you. For what reason, we have no idea, but thank you for all you do, and we are pleased to send you 50% of our tax dollars. For what reason, we have no idea. But because you are there and they thank you at ball games and on beer commercials, we thank you for all you do. For what reason, we have no idea.
Our first guest tonight is Mel Thorsen, a member of the Grand Rapids, Minnesota 9/11 Truth Group. Hello, Mel.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on your show this evening.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show. You know, when I saw your location was Grand Rapids, Minnesota, I had to look that up on the Google map, and looks to me like you're 30 or 40 miles almost due west of where Mike lives in Cloquet.
Yeah, we're about that distance, just a hop, skip, and a jump over there every once in a while to go to through Cloquet, yep.
Well, have you met Mike in person yet?
You know, I had the opportunity of meeting him one time. He came to a presentation that our 9/11 group put on in University of Minnesota Duluth, and we had James Fetzer speak there about his title of his program is "The Global War on Terror Justified by 9/11." Of course, it's not. So, yeah, that's when I met Mike for the first time. I've talked to him on the telephone a few times.
Oh, great. Well, for someone who hasn't studied 9/11 as much as you have, why don't you tell our listeners why people should doubt what the government's told us about
it? Well, that takes quite a while, as you all know.
It's probably more a question of why they shouldn't doubt it, but I think most of us have... some pretty good ideas. We'd just like to hear your take on it in a sort of a capsule summary.
Well, my take on it is that you go back to history, and you'd have to go back very far. One in particular is the neoconservative movement. And I guess that's kind of where we are right now, and our group is talking about the neoconservatives, and also we had this last February 1st, we had Kevin Barrett speaking at UMD, and the title of his program was "Are the Neocons the New Nazis?" And went through the history of neoconservatism, and that's where we're kind of at right now, and I guess that's what I'll probably be taking up my interview talking about that. It's always been their political movement to aggressively promote U.S. foreign policy. As everybody knows, the neocons were a group of liberals, basically, back in the 60s and 70s that didn't want to go with the social movement, you know, in favor of power to the people, so to speak. So they wanted to keep the military going. And up through the years, of course, they were responsible for Gulf War I, and which brought us in. The reason why that was brought in, of course, was because the Cold War was over and they needed a new enemy to make a bunch of money on. So that's kind of where we're at right now with it. And very much convinced that these neoconservatives are a big part of what brought us into 9/11.
You know, it doesn't seem to me that neoconservatives are conservative at all in the traditional sense. You mentioned that they came from a liberal movement. I've heard a definition that liberals are people who... endorse change, who look for change, and conservatives are people who resist change. Based on that, the neocons are they're looking for change in the form of more power, reduction of human rights, you name it.
Yeah, they definitely Well, that's part of their philosophy. Their philosophy is that elites need to protect democracy from mob rule, of course, which is us. That's part of the definition, too. I guess we can consider ourselves part of the mob at the gate, screaming and hollering, saying, hey, we don't want to fight any more of these wars. They're killing us, literally, and they're killing us financially and morally. We don't want any more. So I guess the neocons take it on themselves to say, hey, get back and shut up and put up and salute that flag and send your young ones to battle for us.
Mel, what do you do when you're not talking about the 9/11 truth and neocons and well, the state of politics?
Well, not much. I have a little garden out here and stuff. I'm a disabled person, so I can't do a whole lot, but I do keep myself busy to keep moving around so I don't get too crippled up. But one of the things that I have done besides 9/11 here lately is that Minnesota's kind of going through the same move as what Scott Walker was doing over in Wisconsin, trying to get the right to work movement in, and they're trying to get this voter ID in and take care of the state prevailing wage for construction workers, trying to get rid of that, a total movement of trying to put us in the dark ages here in Minnesota. Everything's been working fine in Minnesota, and they're trying to fix something that's not break just so they can put people, I guess, in the poorhouse, so to speak. And we've taken a couple trips down to St. Paul for right to work, and also the voter ID bill is up on Friday. It's going to be voted in the Senate, and which will require everybody to go in and get a photo ID. And of course, this will disenfranchise a lot of voters in Minnesota. They're figuring up like maybe up to close to a couple hundred thousand when you figure the people of color and the veterans and people in nursing homes and college students and such. It'd be pretty devastating to try to get an honest vote in this state. So that kind of takes up a lot of my time also.
I bet they'll be charging plenty of money and making it very difficult for you to actually get that ID on the first time you go, too.
That's
been my experience in Florida, at least.
Pardon me? I kind of lost you there.
Okay. I was just ranting a little bit about IDs. I ran into something like that down here in Florida, and it's no fun trying to get an ID from these people with the Homeland Insecurity enforcing their silliness. So what's next for you and 9/11 Truth?
Well, where we're at right now, Chuck, is that the 9/11 Itasca 9/11 Truth and Justice Committee is part of the Itasca, the DFL Itasca Progressive Committee, which DFL stands for Democratic Farm Labor. It's a Democratic, Democrats of Minnesota, and it's quite interesting the whole process with 9/11. Of course, you were talking about liberals. And, of course, you ask any Democrat, and well, most of them in Minnesota will say they're liberal, except when it comes to 9/11. The door seems to shut, and they draw up this big curtain, and they don't want to hear anymore. I guess they call it cognitive dissonance, and it's just too painful for them. Well, we went through a couple interesting bouts this last year, and one of them is that we have, of course, the Central Committee meetings once a month, and it was brought up in there that the 9/11 Truth and Justice Committee shouldn't be part of the DFL because it was just too out there and in left field, and you know, I'm patriotic and blah 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 like this, And so it looked like our committee was going to be booted out of the Democratic Party in Minnesota. But surprising to us, it was brought to the state director, and he said no. He says it's a viable organization. We're open to, you know, thought and stuff, and it's like anything else. I mean, if the right women's right and the minority's right to vote wasn't able to go through the process of the civil rights movement, and you know, slavery and such, they were unpopular to begin with too. But they persevered, and that's same with 9/11. If it runs its course and it's not there, well, it'll probably dissolve. But you have a bunch of people that are actually legitimately pursuing it, and so therefore, it came down from the state Democratic DFL director that that we're a viable committee, and we're in a progressive, which is separate from the regular DFL party. It's part of the party, but we have our separate meetings and such. So we made it through that round, which was a pretty major victory. And of course, a lot of them still don't like it and are looking for ways to knock us out of here.
Well, congratulations on that, and let's hope that they don't come up with anything that does knock you out. We're about out of time. Is there anything you would like to shout out to our listeners in parting?
Yeah, just don't give up. I mean, it's just like everything else. If you feel deep down inside and you research it, I mean, you just can't take on an issue and just because it's a good idea. I mean, you got to look into it. And that, of course, you, Chuck, and Mike, and Jim Fetzer, and Kevin Barrett, and a lot of us others in the 9/11 Truth Movement, we know there's a legitimate reason why we're doing this, a scientific basis a lot of times. You just got to hang in there and keep on pursuing it. And one day, you know, just like Dr. Martin Luther King's killer, James Earl Ray, it was proven that he was not the shooter, that it was actually part of the police department and the federal government involved. So it's after all these years, and you just got to keep pursuing the truth.
Well, I think that those are great words to live by. Pursue the truth and don't give up. Thank you, Mel, and have a good night.
Yeah, thank you very much, and I really appreciate your guys' program. It's where this country needs to go. Thank you.
WorldNewsTrust.com is a news site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com.
The New American Dream Radio Hour is also being brought to you by the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. Guess what? Terrorists did not do 9/11. They can tell us because we got these badges. And there's no such thing as Al-Qaeda. It's all just the CIA. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are just for profit for the rich, and those who died on both sides, well, whatever. And this airport stuff is just to scare people and make them think the wars and the terrorists were, well, real and stuff. But hey, come here. Hey, don't touch my wand. Really, dude, not cool. But guess what? Come here. No, really, come here. This is an awesome job. You ever wanted to, well, you know, you see some awesome babe at Walmart or at the pool or in Big Food, and you just wish you could, well, you know, right there? Well, here you can. It's like being your own dream, but it's real. And did you hear? They're going to start a Superfoods Security Administration. Dude, I would get my application in. Dude, this is a great job. I'm not going to have to go to college. I'm not going to have to work construction. I'm not going to have to be homeless or work at Sears. Oh, my God. This is a great job.
The best of the best, Navy SEALs. They swim underwater wearing camouflage face paint, green and gray. Put in sidewalks in poor neighborhoods? No. Bring health care to poor people? No. To find out the truth about our history, free prisoners from prison? No. And no. Well, then what? What do the best of our country do then? Well, they kill. Kill silently. They swim back underwater, hold their breath a really long time after killing people with knives or their bare hands. And their face paint does not run or smear. Dude, wow. Navy SEALs, the best of the best. The best our country has to offer. Wow.
Now I'd like to welcome our second guest, Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer is the jefe of the Chiapas Catholic Worker. He is in the States for a couple weeks now. I think he's in Kansas City tonight doing construction work to make money for the Catholic Worker. Richard, are you there?
Yeah, I've just been contemplating how our government works or doesn't work. My wife recently applied for a visa to come to the U.S. She's a Mexican national citizen. And she's been refused five times, but this time, for some reason, she was allowed to have a visa to come to the U.S. It seems like there is no appeal. There's no possibility for me to go in with her, even though I'm married to her. And I ask why she's denied the other times, and they say, well, we think she's going to go to the U.S. and not come back. And I said, wait a minute, you know, we've traveled to England, and we've traveled to Spain, and we've traveled to Italy, and we've traveled to Guatemala, and we've traveled to El Salvador, and in each case, she's come back. What makes you think she won't come back if she goes to the United States? Which sort of triggered this other thought that I've been having of late about nationalism. And
hey, Rich, can I interject something?
Sure.
Why do they care if she comes back or not?
Well, apparently, there are two kinds of visas, immigrant visa and a visitor's visa. And
oh, I see.
They want to know why she isn't applying for an immigrant's visa, that is to come and live in the U.S. permanently.
Do you want people to email or write somebody?
I don't want to be a U.S. citizen.
Do you want people
to
write something?
For a visitor's visa.
Right. Okay.
And as a visitor's visa, she apparently has to meet certain demands, but it's like this Kafka novel. I mean, nobody knows what the demands are. So it sort of got me thinking about nationalism again and about what, because of an accident of birth, that Araceli was born in Mexico and not born in the U.S., we go through this tremendous turmoil about coming to the U.S. Only to visit. And it makes me think about this sort of arrogance of the American people that somehow people would want to come here and stay forever. And, of course, that totally denies other nations and other nationals, the idea of living in their own country, that life might be better in Mexico, despite all the violence and all the other troubles. Fact of the matter is, life is better for me and for my wife living in Mexico. But there's also this other problem of everyone thinks that of Mexico or Mexicans as a great monolith, when in fact, there are 62 languages spoken in Mexico. There are over 60 separate Indian tribes, my wife being from one of them. There's a tremendous variety, a tremendous, like the U.S., Mexico is a country of immigrants. There's a large Chinese, ethnic Chinese community. There's a large Irish community. Just like in the U.S., when with the potato famine, the Irish, there were quotas in those days as well. And when ships from Ireland were turned away in the 19th century, those Irishmen went to Mexico. So you have heroes of the Mexican Revolution like Pablo O'Higgins, But again, it's that sort of arrogance that in the U.S. they think of Mexicans as a monolith, as a block of small, dark-skinned people, when in fact there's a huge variety, a great difference. But it's like that. That's one of the problems I encounter pretty regularly in the U.S. There are such a... I guess part of the problem seems to be that wealth and is one of the factors, but the other factor is this sense of cultural isolationism, that in America we are the end-all and be-all. Yet even in our pop culture, like people like Shakira or Selma Hayek. Selma Hayek is from Mexico, but her father was a Lebanese businessman who came over during the Lebanese Civil War with the Christians and the Muslims. The father of Shakira is another Lebanese businessman who came to Colombia in the 1960s. It seems that we're so short-sighted, we don't think of how the cultures blend and meld. And, of course, that's the nature of what people call plurality.
Richard, is there any way that people can help out with that, or would you rather that not happen with your...
You know, I'm of a mind that I think people need to work where they are. That is, start with the people around you, but just be conscious of things like everybody's complaining about gas prices. But the fact of the matter is the gas prices are low in the U.S. compared to other places, and it's on the backs of the poor. All of this stuff, for example, of the great problems with everybody complaining about money and security. And the truth is, there's no security in this world. I mean, I don't understand why people are so afraid. I drive through Mexico. I've covered 7 civil wars, and things are just not that difficult. And we're gonna get through it. You work with other people. You try to live a life of sympathy and poverty, and don't take any more than you need. Just share with others. That's pretty basic stuff. Of course, that goes back to the Catholic worker philosophy. But and remember that one of my favorite quotes is that of Immanuel Kant, who said, "Complete freedom for the wolves means death for the lambs." And for me, I think of that often, that all of our freedoms, I mean, people rant and rave about they're taking our freedoms away from us. Well, there's a responsibility that goes with that liberty, and the responsibility is to serve your brothers and sisters. And it seems to me that we ought to think more often about that stuff. And as for something concrete, just look around you. You see somebody poor on the street, stop and talk to them. You don't have to give them money. Just stop and talk to them. Recognize who they are. And recognize them as fellow human beings. Yeah, that's enough of my preaching.
Richard, is there? Can you tell people a way that they can contribute to your work in Chiapas, a website or an address or something?
Sure. Anyone can send a check or a money order to Holy Family Catholic Church, and the address is 1715 Izard, Izard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102. And just direct that the check be sent to in care of the, or for the Chiapas Project. And basically, we serve the poor. We're doing more and more work with women who've been raped on the border with the gang activity. Girls, 13, 14, 15 years old. And we take them in and help them have their babies and place the babies in with other families around there. But there's always work for everybody. I mean, all you need to do is look around you and quit spending time in front of the television. Get off your butts and go out and look for help. Look to help. And believe me, it's a great life. I've never been happier in my life than these last few years in Mexico trying to serve the poor. And I must say, I'm not a very good disciple. I'm not a very good exemplar of being a good Catholic worker. But the main thing is, as Dorothy Day was so fond of saying, we're not called to be efficient, just faithful. And those of us who aren't very efficient like that a lot.
Richard, thank you for your time, and thank you for all you've done, and I hope you'll be able to come back and be a guest in a couple months or so.
I'd love it. Love it.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Nice talking to you, Richard. Have a good night.
Okay. Good night.
What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.
You could be the next American Idiot. Auditions for American Idiot 2013 are being conducted next Saturday in room 203, the high school history classroom. You can study for the competition by reading the local high school history textbook. Copies are available at the front desk up to the day of audition. You may also prepare by watching the nightly news, the Today Show, Fox News, or National Public Radio. The winners of local competitions will advance to regional finals in either Waco, Oklahoma City, Memphis, Los Angeles, Evelyn, Minnesota, New York City, or Washington, D.C. The finals will be held at Dealey Plaza in Dallas. And the winner of the next American Idiot competition will be buried at sea on national television live, sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Well, it's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Next year, 2013, will be the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. There'll be books and movies and specials all about that day, all trying to tell us how we think and feel about that day, when everyone already knows in their gut and their heart how they think and feel about that day. In our town, there are many people who think that Kennedy was killed by Oswald, and that's all there is to it. There are also people who are not insane or retarded or idiots who know this is not the way it was because they can just feel it in their toes. One of those is Johnny Moon. Johnny Moon has a story of his own, and part of his very own story is the story of that day. November 22nd, 1963, the most important day there ever was and will be, until September 11th, 2001 came. And that is the most important day ever and ever and ever will be until the day the attack Iran. The funny thing is, those days are all connected. They're all kind of the same day. The idiots don't know that. They never will. I doubt I'll ever know it. But Johnny Moon knows.
Hey, hey, you're up. You're up. Someone hollered at Johnny, sitting on the ground against the priest's garage while the rest of his team took their turns kicking. Sister Mark served as permanent pitcher for both teams today. Sister M&M stayed with the kids in the merry-go-round, monkey bar, swings area. They supposedly rotated, but Mark most often grabbed the kickball game. Mark's cheeks gleamed rosy red, framing a wide smile. She tied her black shawl around her waist. Her black gloves were cut off at the knuckles. She pounded the white ball in her hand. Johnny continued to play in the dirt, messing with the ants, naming them, watching what they did, where they went, who they associated with. While he doodled in this dirt with his stick, making pictures of space alien ships, my favorite Martian little antennas and laser beams and Moses and burning bushes. Johnny imagined being one of those ants down there, working harder, finding this one twig like it was the golden twig, the twig of all time, pulling that twig around all day long, thinking there must be something special to be done with this amazing twig, just looking and looking and nobody telling him nothing. Who is up? Sister hollered out, breast puffs hanging in the air above her head like cartoon dialogue boxes. Who's up? Let's go! He pointed at Johnny, with his behind turned toward her, on his knees, with both hands on the bricks, pushing and grabbing to stand, trying to whistle the intro music to the Andy Griffith Show.
Johnny found his way up and shuffled to take his turn at bat. He stepped up to the rubber mat home plate on the blacktop and backed up three long steps. Come on, someone yelled. Why does he always have to do that? He just stands against the door. Jeez. Johnny pressed his heels against the white garage door. Sister leaned over and wrapped the ball in her left hand and arm. She shuffled and slid like a bowler. At the end of her release, she flicked her wrist. The ball spun as it headed toward Johnny, clunking toward the ball and his snow boots, buckles clattering. He saw the ball and opened his eyes wide and tucked his tongue into the corner of his mouth. He clenched his hands and extended his arms like a field goal kicker. Drew his leg back and kicked at it just as the ball turned right. Johnny looked up at the pigeon club swooping over the school. He held out his arms like a blue whale pigeon. He cracked the small of his back on the blacktop as Sister whipped around and slapped hands with her sickle font first base girl. Ribbons of color shot across Johnny's eyes. He caught his breath and realized where he was. Johnny sat back on his hands, looking out at Sister.
I missed it by a mile, someone said. Johnny wanted to play for the Yankees. There he was, sitting on his butt on the playground with Sister Mark chewing confiscated fruit stripe gum, maybe his gum, and glaring at him, just a dumb little kid. While he sat there, Johnny locked eyes with the third baseman, the fourth grade boy who had given him the 14 cents to find his Mickey Mantle card. Get up, the boy yelled, Johnny. With her head down, Sister towed the pitcher's rubber green chalk mark on the blacktop. With one hand, she caught the ball, fired back to her from the catcher on Johnny's team. Johnny heard giggling. Come on, let's go, let's go. We want a bat, too. Johnny rolled over to push off the stand. He returned to place his heels against the white garage door. Johnny Moon, come on, Johnny, hit it out here, someone said. Sister coiled into her stance, began her approach. Johnny shuffled fast toward the ball. The ball took a screwball turn, and Johnny sat on his hands in a haze. The third time, Sister deigned to make giant slow-motion gestures, showing she wasn't doing anything strange with the ball. Johnny took a giant lunge kick and popped out weakly to the second sacker, wearing a blue plaid skirt, black shoes, white blouse, and bright red button-down sweater. Moonshot! Not. Johnny sat down on the blacktop against the garage. stretched out his legs with his giant snowshoes pointing straight up. He put up his left hand in front of him like a partial parenthesis. Placed the middle finger of his other hand just inside the parenthesis to show the first, second base person. Sister! Donnie Moon!
Sister Mary Michael's fingers-in-the-mouth whistle signaled the end of noon recess. She waved her hand twice 180 degrees to tell Sister Mark to stop pitching and help her gather the children to go inside. Sister Mark pounded the ball with both hands on the pavement and pointed to the next girl in line. You're next, to say that girl was the first batter in tomorrow's recess, but it was Friday. And by Monday, maybe, the girl could only hope Sister Mark would forget whose turn it was. Sister Mark pointed at each of the rubber bases and home plate, then marched off tall and straight, dribbling the kickball as she went toward the fourth grade entrance, followed by her sweaty, jabbering class. In the classroom, after the coats and hats and boots were put away and the last of the outside-type stories told, the third-grade boys and girls found their desks and began to steel themselves for what was to come, a whole afternoon of English, arithmetic, and vocabulary. Sister Mary Michael hit her mark in the center of the room in front of the class, between them and the blackboard. At least she got to see out the windows at the green elevator and the bank and the radio tower.
Sister Something, the principal, appeared miraculously in the doorway. Her brown robes gracefully just skimmed the floor. She folded her arms at her waist, each arm presumably tucked into the opposite sleeve where Kleenex and absconded magic markers and matchbox cards were also stored. Sister Mary Michael hustled over like a ball player to a coach. The two whispered. The children fidgeted, feet stretched back, turning around to talk, poking someone in back of them with a pencil, smiling, looking behind with a mirror. Looked like all were silent and serene from a distance, like the earth from the moon, but up close, all were engaged in some sort of activity, surreptitious and not. Johnny messed with his rings, wished he had enough for all 10. Wondered if Jimmy Purple would take him to the dime store and show him how to cob things. Jimmy said he went down with a winter coat, just messed with something like he was looking it over to buy, then just pushed it down into his sleeve. Walked out of there with his sleeve full of cool stuff. Pens and gum and markers and ink pads. Johnny wanted a couple more rings. Sister Mary Michael turned toward the class, her head down, her hands folded together. She slid back to the door when Sister Principal Something stuck her head back in and held her arm out with a fistful of Kleenex. For the girls, she whispered, nodded toward the class. Sister Mary Michael found her spot directly under the clock above the chalkboard. It said 12:40. She looked up to the class. She had red, shiny eyes. Her nose was running. She wiped tears away with her wad of Kleenex. The children tried to figure out what was wrong. Maybe some kid in his family had been killed in a car accident. Maybe this morning's mass didn't count because of Johnny Moon and they all were getting venial sins for missing mass on a weekday. Maybe bowling wouldn't be held next month. But for sure, her sister was crying in public in class. And they grew nervous. Like horses in a barn with a tornado headed their way. Class, girls and boys, she said. Took a deep breath, they could tell because her robes moved. The president has been shot. Oh! The class sat with eyes and mouths wide open, staring hard at sister. Then to each other, what? What'd she say? President? The president? Sister fell to her knees on the hardwood floor, found her rosary, crossed herself, and began. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Each child slid out of their desk to kneel on the right side. Each folded their hand, bowed their head to just touch the tip of their noses with the tip of their index finger, like expectant young angels at the feet of God's almighty throne. Jimmy Purple slid off the left side of his desk, putting him right next to a girl he liked, and refused to yield.
Sister led the class in the sorrowful mysteries of the rosary. She then pulled and pushed herself up by one of the front row desks and stumbled over to her desk. She disappeared behind the statue of St. Michael the Archangel that the other nuns had given her on her last feast day. They heard Dave in the hallway through a crack in the door left by the principal talking about whether to bring in radios or TVs to the classroom and where they would get them and whether the cords would reach. "We're all going to die," someone whispered. "There will be a nuclear war. Nice knowing you. Communists did it. It's because of the Beatles and Castro. Oh, brother. We'll never go to the moon now, so forget that." A girl on the front desk turned and stuck her whole body into the aisle to look at Johnny. "We never were," said someone else. At the same time, the boys and girls realized they would soon be rounded up by Russian soldiers and made to line up in the playground and say there is no God. A boy and a girl shot from their desks and ran to the window to stand on their tiptoes and pull themselves up by the ledge to try and see down into the street and up to the sky. Sister wiped her nose and began to ask them to please return to their seats and ask if they could see anything. Johnny curled his toes inside his shoes and clenched his hands into kung fu dinner roll fists.
"We choose to go to the moon," Johnny whispered. And the other things. Couldn't believe he was doing this. "Not because it's easy, but because it is hard." Johnny pushed himself out of his desk to his knees. The children turned their heads into the aisle to see. Johnny flexed his fat hands and placed them flat on the wood floor. With the back of his hands, he swept away some of the dirt and playground mud. He leaned over his hands and stretched back his legs to stand on his tiptoes. He kicked out his legs and stuck them out like a sprinter getting ready for a race, the way Coach Isom had showed him. He checked the back of his pants and gave a yank to make sure he didn't moon everyone like he had done once during exercise with Coach that day when Coach Isom could be there. He took a deep breath and let himself down. "Johnny Moon can't do a push-up," one of the boys said. Johnny's face glowed radish red. His hands burned whiter. His arms shook as he brought his nose down to just touch the wooden floor. He exhaled and pushed up. His legs shook. "Not because they're easy, but because they're hard," he said in a rush. He reached the top and held it. Again, Johnny let himself down and pushed himself up. And again, as the other children watched him with their mouths open. Jimmy Purple and Michael Irish flopped to the floor, their joints cracking, and began doing push-ups, their behinds high in the air like cows rising. Sister Mary Michael wiped her eyes with the tail of her headdress, pushed off from her desk, and walked to the front of the room. She stared down at the three boys on the floor. She stretched out her arms and dropped to the floor like a cliff diver, smacking her hands on the tile, and began doing push-ups, pausing on one arm to throw her veil out of her eyes. The children flooded the aisles, began kicking each other to have enough room, and stepping on each other's hands to have enough room, and farting on accident and on purpose in order to have enough room to do push-ups. A few minutes later, they all sat in the aisles, breathing hard. Sister Mary Michael, with her back against the front wall, her legs bent upward, both hands clutching her rosary, stared out the windows at nothing. They heard amplified noise coming from the brown box intercom above the closed room. First, they heard messing with papers and a loud thud and a chair scooting and whispering. Then they heard Father's voice and Sister Principal something as if they were arguing. "In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, That was father. Please, silence! That was sister. And then a couple of frantic whispers back and forth. President John F. Kennedy has died. Let us pray.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO high school history teachers are about average.
We thank you for joining us on the New American Dream Radio Show tonight. Stay tuned right here for Black Op Radio with our producer, Len Osanek. He does a great show every week. We'd like to thank worldnewstrust.com, thespiritualun.org, and june2508.com. Those are the websites for our three sponsors. We hope you'll visit them and tell them we sent you. Thank you, and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm, and good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer, and good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being if it's just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through all American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people, without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity, and that is all energy free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American Founders' version? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org, come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org. Did you know there are some aspects of 9/11 even 9/11 truthers are afraid to discuss? Who was responsible and why? Calls from the planes were faked. No plane crashed in Shanksville. No Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon. Video fakery was used in New York, and the media was profoundly involved. 9/11 was a fabricated Hollywood-style event. The one conference that will rip the veil of secrecy, the one conference that dares to tell the truth, the Vancouver hearings at the Denman Theater, June 15th to 17th. Just Google 911vancouverhearings.com. Be there if you have the courage to learn truths others dare not speak. The Vancouver hearings at the Denman Theater, June 15th to 17th.
Oh.